Good morning. I'm David Ellis, and this is Down to Brass Tacks for Friday, July 27th, 2018. Stay with us until 1 o'clock today and take the opportunity to share your perspective on community and national issues, and even international issues if you so desire. But I know that we couldn't start today's program without recognizing that there's a lot of interest in this case involving the men that have been held in connection with that big drug bust a couple days ago. And all Barbados is watching to see how this matter is going to be dealt with. Already, there is a lot of discussion about the length of time it is taken to bring charges, but lawyers and others familiar with these matters say that it is not unusual in such circumstances, and much depends on the stage of investigations. They also point out that if a defense attorney believes it is taking too long, then he or she can go before the court for a writ of habeas corpus. So the very fact that that hasn't taken place so far suggests that there is some element of cooperation on the matter. Another discussion point is how the matter will be treated and the degree to which it will accentuate the different Barbadoses that we may have. And so there is that concern about how the system is going to handle this particular matter. Now, even we here in the media have had our approach brought under scrutiny. And it is, generally speaking, true to say that you might have seen a greater degree of caution than some people believe has existed in the past. I think a lot has to do with the fact that when other people are held, in many instances they are not well-known figures and that sort of thing. So the focus is not on how many days they've been kept in custody before the police bring charges. But there is another major reason why some media houses are a little bit more cautious. There has been a major case, and I don't know if you've been listening to what's been happening in Britain. The BBC has just been refused the right to appeal against a court's decision to award Sir Cliff Richard substantial damages in a privacy row. Now, Sir Cliff, many of you may know, has been a frequent visitor to Barbados. He has had a property here, and at one stage, when the former Prime Minister Tony Blair was in power, he came to Barbados and stayed there. Sir Cliff was awarded £210,000 in damages in this privacy case, as well as an additional $850,000 in legal costs. Pounds, not dollars. The BBC had attempted to overturn the original ruling, saying there was a compelling reason for an appeal. And lawyers for the broadcaster cited a severe chilling effect on press freedoms. Now, Sir Cliff had sued the broadcaster following its coverage of a South Yorkshire police raid on his home in August of 2014. Officers were investigating an allegation of historic child sex abuse against him, which the Star has always denied. In his judgment, Mr. Justice Mann said the BBC had infringed Sir Cliff's privacy rights in a serious and sensationalist way. He rejected the BBC's case that its reporting, which included footage filmed from a helicopter, was justified under rights of freedom of expression and of the press. Mr. Justice Mann said, "A suspect in a police investigation has a reasonable expectation of privacy. And while Sir Cliff being investigated might be of interest to the gossip monger, there was not a genuine public interest case." And that is a major reason why lawyers and people associated with the media have been a little bit more cautious in recent times because of that particular case. Now, there is another aspect of this that is being discussed, and I've seen it raised on social media, whether the Speaker of the House of Assembly should be involved in a case of this nature. Now, you got to step back, in my judgment, and ask the question whether our system has, over the years, allowed speakers to practice at the private bar if they were attorneys at law. And I want to make this clear, because in my position, I come up against a number of scenarios where, when you raise issues, people take it as a personal assault. I try my best not to deal with the personalities, but to deal with the system, and to what extent, when things come before us, to what extent are they presenting us with systemic issues that we need to look at? And this question of the Speaker and being able to function as Speaker of Parliament while at the same time working at the private bar is one that we may very well have to look at. First of all, as pointed out to me, the Speaker does not get the same money as a minister. He gets 2/3 what a minister gets. And there's one body of opinion that if you're seeking to, this is seen as a part-time job. It is not seen as a full-time job within the system. Huh? So if you are going to request that a speaker not be involved for significant reasons, because one point of view is that the speaker, there's a separation between the legislature and the judiciary. And that somehow, if you have a speaker going to court, then there is that undermining of that separation. But if in the circumstances the person is allowed to go to the private bar, then you're going to have to deal with the issue of what type of case are you going to take. And now some people have held the view that they would look for non-contentious issues and stay behind the scenes, under the radar, so to speak. But I raise it because I think other people are putting it out there for discussion, and it is something that I don't think we can run away from. Do we go the distance and say, this must now become a full-time job for which you will have to pay accordingly? Or are you satisfied with the part-time scenario? And in those circumstances, how are you going to control what the person takes and what they reject? Okay? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
How are you today?
I'm well, and you?
I'm fairly good. This is the first time I'm coming on since the elections.
Yes.
But I got three quick ones for you. As far as that boat thing is concerned, I'm going to be very brief on that. But so long as a boat is in the water, it must have a captain. Somebody got to be in charge. So the police will have to deal with that one. You understand?
Yes.
Anyhow, I saw an article in the papers this morning with Don Villanis calling for the head of the BW and the UPW.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Innes don't understand that the people in Barbados finished with the Democratic Labour Party. Nobody don't want anything from Mr. Innes. He had 10 years to do all his talking. He did absolutely nothing. And there's money blue. Mr. Ellis should take the advice from Guy Hewitt, Senator David Jewett, and the others. Nobody want to hear one single word from those losing candidates that contest the May the 24th general election for the Democratic Labour Party. Mr. Ellis knows that. Tell him go one side and step aside.
Are you saying, though, that no matter what they have to say, even if what is being said may have some validity to it? No, I'm not saying that his call in this particular instance does. But, I mean, you're just going to discard them completely just like that?
Yep, to say this, Bill, and I finished with that subject. My final one is that
Well, I can't encourage a statement to the effect that they can't be trusted. I don't.
Well, I apologize.
No, I can't. I wouldn't want to encourage that at all.
Okay, I can take that from you.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be careful with my words.
Okay.
So that gave me a slip, and I'm very sorry.
No problem.
Yeah, but my final one is that I'm a former soldier in the Barbados Defense Force. I'm going to be quick with this one. I trained a mobile.
The commission for...
We got to take our case to the new Prime Minister, Mayor Armour Motley. I'm one of the guys who, when we joined the Army, we served 10 years in the Army. After we served 10 years, I went beyond that. I went 11 years and 3 months. When the pensions was due now, when they were supposed to pay the pensions now, they moved the age, the qualifying age, from 10 years to 15 years, and they excluded about almost 300 fellas. And I feel that is very wrong. The Democratic Labor Party moved the term from 10 years to 15 years. So all these fellas who do under 15 years and get a pension. And I'm saying that we have a big, big case.
Okay.
Because a politician do 2 terms in office. A soldier work week is about 140 hours. And when I finish, you can get any one of the chief of staff to come on the radio and dispute that. Listen, they have a system in the BDF that when you go to work on a Monday and you're working one off, one on, that you will work Monday off Tuesday. If you go to work Monday morning at 7:30 and you're going off Tuesday evening, you know you're going off Monday evening and something goes wrong and you're in there till tomorrow morning, then you're going to spend 3 days in the Army on that shift. So I don't see why the fellas should be denied a pension after doing 10 years. When you work in government for 10 years, you usually qualify for a pension. Politicians work one day a week, a Tuesday or Friday, for about 5 hours. And when they finish their 2 terms, they get a load of pension. So I'm saying
But they don't just do that work. Most of them, many of them serve as cabinet ministers and that sort of thing. So.
But I don't mind. I can excuse them for that. But I mean, I tell them about the Irish backbencher.
Well, as you said, you have to make your case to the new government. So you get yourselves organized so that you can represent yourselves before the government on the matter. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. Greetings and salutations to your good self. I love your preamble, but I am sorry that I can't make comment as I don't like dealing with things which I deem too rich for my blood. But you have sent me down memory lane when you made a little reference to the speaker, which caused me, as I say, to go down memory lane with Burton Hines when he became speaker. However, my point this morning, sir, is that I am a member of the Church of St. Barnabas Church where I do worship. Sunday after Sunday, there is a prayer said for the election of a bishop. As a devoted Anglican, I am concerned that today the failure to elect one of our own is going to create a division in the Anglican Church. Sir, hear what comfortable words our Savior Christ saith unto all those that truly turn to him. Come unto me, all that travel and are heavy laden, and I will refresh you. St. Matthew 11:28. As the clergy and laity return to the election process, which is going to be next Monday, coming July the 30th, 2018, will be meeting for the fourth time to elect a bishop. It's my belief this time also around they will also end in deadlock, which without doubt is going to cause, as I said earlier on, a division in the Anglican
Church. I thought that division already exists. The very fact that they have been deadlocked on so many occasions in the vote shows that there is a division.
Okay, then, but if we can't choose one of our own.
The House of Bishops will choose one for you. Somebody out of Jamaica or someplace like that, and you will be all comfortable with that. You'll be more comfortable with that than trying to come to a compromise here. And I hope they look for somebody who's 32 years old. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, there were two things I wanted to discuss, but the first guy got in on the one with Mr. Ennis. But what I want to say about that one is that the union put forward a percentage, the government put forward nothing. And coming close to the election, the Prime Minister said that he ain't got no more talks with the union, so he don't see what Mr. Ennis trying to do. But he got to know what he want to do. The ZR and the minibus, they saw into their papers where they want to increase in bus fares. Them, in my opinion, them sounds so terrible that them don't know the song.
What's terrible about how they sound?
Huh?
What's terrible about it?
Mr. Ellis said he's going to catch a ZR, and you just go in the ZR stand, and the way that they get on, the amount of marijuana, the smoke, the amount of drinks and things, them to go clean up their act first.
But that's about the authorities policing them in all the circumstances. That does not address the whole question of the increased cost of fuel and the implications that that would have for their operations.
I understand what you are saying perfectly, Ms. Ed, but what I'm saying is the drivers and the conductors, they got to clean up their act. You want
they're not going to do that all on their own. You know that. This is one of those areas where you need to have it properly policed.
Of course.
It has to be enforced. Otherwise, people in this country do as they like. I was in I had to go into Magistrate's Court this week, and I mean I was like depressed. That when you look at the number of young Barbadian men going to court and sitting there waiting for somebody to tell them when next they're going to get an appointment, and to actually have their cases heard sometimes that very day, and that's only one court. I mean, it is depressing. And this is all part and parcel of that behavior that you were talking about out there. I mean, people have just lost it, too many of them. By the same token, when you see that and you step out of the court and you see other young males who seem to be involved in better pursuits and that sort of thing, you know, it tends to warm your heart a bit more. But we have a real problem. And you're seeing that manifesting itself, part of it, in the ZR culture and stuff.
Another thing about the ZR, you see, I don't know if you know that stand good. You see, they got a line of businesses when you come at the road, where they're playing music and doing as they like. All them they want pushing them.
Well, I have also noticed, for instance, that Swan Street has now taken on a completely different atmosphere. Some one or two store owners are now blaring music right through the street. I don't understand how Barbados allows these things to just creep up upon us. And the next thing you know, what is to stop many more stores in Swan Street from doing that? Where are the people who are supposed to police those things? It isn't that you want to stop somebody from earning a living, but they got to do so within the confines of respect for other people. They have taken Swan Street now. It has become a place where people pull all their clothes out on the street. Sometimes you can hardly walk the street properly. I mean, everything just goes haywire in this country. And when you start to talk about it, you don't like this individual or you don't like the small black man and that sort of thing. I'm all for encouraging the business and stuff. There are other places where people want to attract your attention, and they themselves may come out onto the street and invite you into the place. But there are so many people right now who are selling not just clothes. Swan Street is now a place that they sell vegetables and fruit on the street. It has changed its character. But the main thing I was raising here is the noise. You know, the people who are pushing their music and you can hear it from one end of Swan Street to the next. That's not right in my judgment.
It ain't right in mine either. But, Miss Ellis, thanks for your time.
Okay. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello. Good morning, Miss Ellis.
Morning.
Yeah, a couple of things here. That story that appeared in the paper concerning that boat or that yacht, that's one of those scenarios which I think should be left alone, because I am one of those people who don't expect nothing much to come out of that anyhow. Because there were more than instances in Barbados which I could recall having spent in my short time on the face of the surf. I told you on more than one occasion, and I told Dennis Johnson, that there are two types of people in Barbados. You have the class one and the class three. And therefore, when I see certain things happen, I just bypass those things. But I would tell the Commissioner of Police, Tyrone Griffith, that he has to look at his force and take a good look at himself. The second thing has to do with...
On that score, I want you all to bear this in mind, huh?
Uh-huh.
Do not ignore the fact that the authorities intercepted this boat and that people were held, irrespective
right.
of all the things that you may be saying.
Uh-huh.
It could have gone another way, and that must be respected in this country.
Well, that is true.
There's a lot of people talking and they forget that.
Yeah, but was this the first time?
I don't know.
Oh.
How would I know?
Okay. And I used to hear Auntie America talking about, where do the political parties in Barbados get money to fight Nazis parties?
Listen.
And you know,
look.
Come on. You see.
Look, let me tell you something. There's a limit to how far you can go in drawing certain connections as it relates to this matter. I have sought to deal broadly with some aspects of it, but I cannot go beyond that right now, and I will encourage you to be careful. And if you're not careful, just take your guidance from me, all right?
I'm finished with that. But however, the IUP, the president, I'm not surprised.
What about the president, that he and the union seem to have been able to reconcile their differences now?
I don't know.
Well, that's what's reported today. Of course, you didn't read the paper, right?
I haven't found the paper yet.
Right. So you thought that you were talking about the rift.
Mm.
Well, I think that rift you got to revise your thoughts.
Okay. I will check the paper later.
All right. Welcome to the program.
Morning.
Yes.
How are you doing today?
I'm well, and you?
Very pretty good. And I'm going to use the term veteran journalist.
Mm.
Now, David, after I heard you made mention, I haven't seen my paper yet. I heard you mention about the minibus man looking, appealing to the new prime minister for increasing bus fares. You recall when David Thompson was prime minister. David Thompson gave those minibus men an offer. You remember that?
And?
You remember what the offer was?
No, tell me.
The offer was you go there and you charge what you want. I give you that privilege. You could put on what you think is necessary in order to run your business. You can't remember that?
And?
As a veteran for journalists.
And what happened? Did they do that?
No.
And why do you think they didn't do it?
Because they didn't know it didn't work.
Precisely.
Right? And again, let me say this. We have to take statistics. I want to know that since then, if there are additional minibuses on the road. So if it is a business that losing money, why would they be on the road? And looking at that, I was able to, you should remember this one. I was looking back at an old paper where on June the 7th, this is way down in 1989, youthful Mr. Lee and Dennis Tull was in Holton in support of a bus driver by the name of, I think it was Thompson. where the magistrate actually wanted to put him up for a couple of days, and the whole minibus people turn out along with supporters of commuters in support of this man. So this thing about minibus men and the behavior, this is now started. But I want to get down to the speaker. That's why I call you a veteran politician. I mean veteran journalist. You remember the origin of the speaker with Theodore Banker?
What do you mean the origin of the speaker with Theodore Banker? What do you mean by that?
When Theodore Banker was made speaker. That is in 1961 after they won the election.
I really would have been... I would have read about that.
I read about that.
Conscious about those things at the time.
Well, at the time, it was said that you could find this in the memoirs of Crawford, that saying that Theodore Banker led the party and then the truth bar as leader, Theodore swear that he would never sit under the leadership of Elba and he was made speaker. And he continued to be speaker until he resigned from Parliament. The longest speaker serving in Parliament was Theodore Banker. And he would also recall that...
And he continued to practice at the bar, the private bar.
He still was able to practice at the bar.
Yes.
And then you had the 76, as that caller was looking at, with Burton Hines.
But Neville Maxwell wasn't a lawyer as well?
He always had problems. Right. That's what he was telling you.
You practiced
had Neville
at the
Maxwell
bar.
After the 1971 election as speaker, and he went bankrupt. I also had in recent times another speaker practicing and went to the stage where the newspaper had made certain things about his credibility.
Yeah.
So we always had problems with speaker. And last but not least...
No, I don't... You know, I have raised it only for one reason, and that is to put before you the dilemma that can be posed by being speaker and being at the bar.
Right.
And to raise the question as to whether it is one of those things that you may want to address. It is not to be seen as any focus on the person per se. This is so, across this country, in so many areas where there are things that are done in a particular way or have been done in a particular way that some people often say, well, if we've done it like that all along, why change it now? And there are others who say, but look, this is one of those things that you need to look at. So it is something worth discussing. Okay?
Yeah, because what I'm saying, I think people are no more aware of what is happening. People in those days never paid that attention until election time. That is what brought me right back down to contracts and catering. I follow politics. I was here from 1966. As you said, I would have been a young boy the same year. And I never questioned the sort of money that a caterer for Parliament receives for a sitting not till it came out last week's paper where the caterer was receiving over $20,000 per sitting. David, let us look at figures. Because if you're looking at costs, cutting on, and how contracts explore to an extent that people have to be conscious because taxpayers are going to pay for it. There are 30 members of Parliament, David. And if you get 30 members of Parliament, $400 to take lunch, $400, that's $12,000. But you can imagine that a caterer charging $20,000 for one sitting in Parliament. You could imagine what the taxpayers is paying for. Just the other day, the Prime Minister raised...
Were you going to put the blame on the caterer?
No, I'm not putting that on the caterer.
I won't put the blame on the caterer. If blame has to be apportioned, then it is the person or persons that approve it. But having said that, one has to have a bit more information about it's not the menu, but how many people are catered for. Because remember, it is not just the 30 members. I believe that some of the staff who work there also have to be looked after. And members also invite people to the House of Assembly from time to time.
Yes,
sometimes. Pardon?
But David reasoned with me. Mm-hmm. Those members that work in Parliament have to work there 5 days a week. So I don't know one day that them going to get feed the bank got to feed them. If you give them lunch, that is that. But I am saying that that cost looks so... If you let me look at it. If I tell you, come and have lunch with me, and they carry you down by
it money, looks high to me, but the truth is that I still don't know what all that is involved, even though it
but
looks high. To sit down here with you and agree that it certainly is not acceptable at that price. It's a shoot in the dark.
All right, well, let me give a rationale, and then anybody could think. And I give you a simple rationale. I would take you to Muster to have lunch with me, and a meal costs $15, and then I buy a drink. I would expect spend about $50.
Yeah.
Now, if I carry you to the Hilton for the same meal, it may cost $100.
Yes.
But the fact that I'm looking at, if you go to the Hilton, you are provided with the different setting at the hotel, table, chairs, and all where it is. When a caterer comes to the Parliament, he is using the tables and the chairs belong to the Parliament. He just cooked the food and bring it there and then distribute it. Some members don't even go in the lunchroom. Some people do not take lunch in Parliament.
What time?
So however you cut it
how,
down, David.
How much time is spent in Parliament? On a given day...
Sometimes it could go different. Sometimes it takes 2 hours.
Sometimes it can start...
It all depends on the issue.
Precisely. So the caterer...
It all depends on the issue, how long it takes.
Well, so I don't know the details. The only thing I can do is to ask for more information so that we can have a better sense of, you know, what is driving the figure at that kind of level.
That cost really, really hit me real hard. And I say that to say that just the other day, that is what I am trying to say, just the other day, the Prime Minister raised non-contributory pensions. And it was a big song and dance that the non-contributor should not receive that amount of money. And we are not looking at the sort of money that we pay a caterer to feed parliamentarians. You want to tell me that parliamentarians and their colleagues, I'm not questioning the B nor the D, should be accepting that sort of money for catering, $20,000 per session? But that's a weird thing.
All right, sir. We got to go. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Yeah, hey, how are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
I'm cuckoo. I disagree entirely with all those people who said that in fact, gave the last administration kudos for the renewable energy. I heard even Lisa Gill yesterday saying it. But when you look back at what they inherit, they would have dropped the ball within the last 10 years. Because when they took up in 2008, the renewable energy were on stream, were well on stream, right? So they basically poked along with it, as per usual, and they didn't carry any weight. They did not carry the process forward. One can ask themselves, how come a government announced initiatives and rebates to individuals and companies, really said renewable energy sector, on at least 3 occasions, right? And then walk away from it. They actually entered. Now, the occasions were from, the first occasion was in the 16th of August 2011 budget. The second occasion, the 5th of March 2013, that during the Trump speech. And then on the 15th of November 2013, during the...
But I really must tell you that I think many people would agree with me that they don't see the value of spending time trying to debunk the notion that they made a contribution. I accept that it was on the cards before they came into office, but you still have to give them some credit for having done the work that they did.
Why is the work you're doing?
Well, they certainly worked to improve
to the point
where we have seen more people in this country now with photovoltaics on their homes. The Williams, for instance, expanded his business in the period. I saw, for instance, Sky Mall was significantly developed in that area. Why do you want to take from them what
no,
little they got?
They did not improve it.
Well,
it,
I want to find out from you. So what is the value of spending this time saying they did or they didn't?
The value is to put things into proper perspective. Because if you don't, you will have a lopsided.
If you want to tell me that you think it could have been further advanced, I can't deny that.
I said that I have not moved the process forward.
Well,
now,
that's
listen,
your opinion.
No, not my opinion. Because these three instances were 2012, 2013. But when once that they entered, they give incentives to the private individuals and the companies, right? But this is what happened once Cahill arrived on the scene. Cahill arrived on the scene with their project, right, in 2014. That is when the government made a U-turn and took away all the incentives. And they gave Cahill, everybody knows, exclusive rights to develop the waste energy plants in Barbados, among other things. They also grant them a sale of the energy of 44 cents per kilowatt per megawatt hour. They also give them free use of the water. They also allow them to use 27 acres of the ground land. You understand? Pay the local lawyer $700,000. That is when they made a U-turn. On the 12th of May, 2015, the government rescinded all of the jobs. You had Mr. The guy from the renewable, from Bear. He was in the program in the studio with you on the 4th of January 2016, right? And he was praising the government, he and Donald Ennis. But I called the program that day. I said to him, how can you be praising this government when they have given the people incentives and then took it back from them? Later in March, the same Mr. Rogers came and he criticized the government. And he said that they have reneged. That they are lacking. That is, if you look at it, once the Cahill project entered the realm, the mainstream, that is when the government made a U-turn. So they have not carried the renewable energy anywhere.
Okay, thank you very much for your contribution.